CBSI and the world, I'm John Batchelor. To Germany, to Judy Dempsey of Carnegie Europe. She is the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. And much of the European Union's opinion of the world right now has to depend upon its stable markets in the midst of a banking crisis in the United States. The report is that the markets are mixed, that is to say, no catastrophe looming, and that the ECB, Germany and the other members of the EU, use the euro. The ECB is looking at being more dovish or more hawkish. Inflation remains a bugaboo in Europe and in the United States. I put that down because the U.S. and Europe are together trying to recover from the pandemic and also conducting what appears to be a surrogate war in Ukraine. And that war in Ukraine involves not only Russia, but its maybe only really strong ally, China. We have remarks from German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in these last days that are very much part of understanding how Europe is approaching Ukraine, how Europe is approaching the future, now that it is a general opinion that the world order of before February of 2022 has changed dramatically. I don't want to use the word broken. Let's just say it's in pieces being put back together. For example, German Chancellor Scholz sent a note to Xi Jinping. I would like to congratulate you warmly on your third term as President of the People's Republic of China. This congratulations joined the only other congratulations of note in this report. That would be from Vladimir Putin. At the same time, China's leader, Xi Jinping, made the Great Wall of Steel speech, very much a bellicose speech. And yet, Judy, a very good day to you. I begin with the remarks about the banking and about China and Germany, because that is the larger umbrella story of dealing with the question you asked your correspondents some days past. Is this a global war in Ukraine? And what about the global South? I come to one of your correspondents, Nicholas Kaledis, who believes that prior to the conflict on the ground that we've seen since February of 2022, Russia has been, he used the word, infiltrating media and social media and confusing, deliberately diverting the European unanimity for liberty away. Is it your measure that that Russian interference in social media in Europe continues, or has Europe defended itself since the beginning of this war? Good day to you, Judy.
Good day to you too, John. The Russian interference certainly continues through misinformation, through disinformation campaigns, through use of the social media, and through infiltration of some of the political parties or the newspapers as well. But don't forget China. China does it in a very different way, going through universities and institutions and financing advertising campaigns and so on. But Europe is waking up to it. It's been very slow. But they're making a public awareness campaign about this kind of disinformation. But it's very hard to actually completely get rid of this disinformation. It's kind of a 21st century relic of the Cold War, when disinformation was the key to winning the hearts and minds of both sides of this ideological divide. This is not an ideological divide in some ways. This is now the great power competition of who will become dominant in the 21st century.
Excellent, because a remark by Christy Rake, Deputy Director of the International Center for Defense and Security in Tallinn, Baltic States, says that let us not try to achieve the unattainable, which is a global consensus. Let us speak of a balance of power. The outcome of this conflict is a balance of power. I agree with that, although, you know, you take a map and you draw up the world island, Eurasia, and you ask, which way is it going? Right now, the question is China and Russia together. Does Europe see them as an opponent, an adversary? The remarks by Olaf Scholz suggest otherwise.
China is being very cautious On the one level, it doesn't want to take the whole stand on the side of Russia, providing it, for instance, with military support. But certainly diplomatic support is crucial. But we have seen an extraordinary rise of China's diplomatic prowess and soft power. Look at the relationship and the deal they struck with Iran and Saudi Arabia as sworn enemies. And now it's nothing new, but what's new is that not only will Xi go to Moscow and meet President Vladimir Putin, but finally he's going to talk to President Zelensky. And one hopes that Zelensky is going to be extremely well briefed and be quite open on what terms he would deal with any kind of negotiations. And maybe we're coming to the stage that China realizes that the Americans can't do this because of the sanctions and the relationship, non-relationship with Russia. Europeans can't do it either. So let's see if China can do it. It's early days yet, but certainly Xi is putting out the feelers on how far China can go and the dangers involved as well if this goes wrong.
There's a sense here in the United States, Judy, that the war has gone on for a year with no resolution in sight, and that the facts of the matter, running low on ammo in NATO, running low on ammo, certainly almost exhausted in Ukraine, and the U.S. itself now shaking its military-industrial complex to reorganize in order to produce a million shells for Ukraine, a million shells for NATO. Who knows how much the U.S. will want to put in the arsenal of democracy, anticipating more conflicts. There's a sense that we've exhausted the hope for a battlefield resolution. Is that true in Germany as well?
It's hard to gauge it in Germany because the mood is still supporting the Ukrainians. There's no doubt about that. The civil society, the whole migration, the refugees, the enormous help going in, the huge financial assistance and growing military assistance to Ukraine. I think Germany has crossed one of the lines that it's now really supporting Ukraine because they realize the kind of extraordinary, unpredictable danger that Russia still continues to pose. But there's such a complicated perception of how this war is going to end. There's a wish that it would end, but there's also a wish that Ukraine will win. And reconciling the two and bringing Russia into the negotiations is going to be extremely difficult. And one last point on this. The Ukrainians are losing an enormous number of soldiers, and replacing them is going to be very difficult. Putin hasn't got this problem yet. He's taken the military from the towns and the cities outside Russia proper, if you understand what I mean. But he's low on ammunition as well. This is a most depressing stalemate.
Yes, now we go to the story of who is not participating in this conflict. That would be, generally speaking, the Global South. I'm looking at remarks from Martin Plaut, Senior Research Fellow, University of London's Institute of Commonwealth Studies, pointing to the Global South and the issues of the Global South are completely discontinuous from the Donbass or Novorossiya or Vladimir Putin's personality. It has to do with climate change, but that is a stand-in for food security, for pandemic security if it comes back, for water security. That is true for parts of Eurasia now where the rivers are unpredictable, either flooding or not adequate to the demands of the population. The Global South, I generalize, Judy, is sitting this out. Does that need attention, much more attention than is being paid?
The attention that the West is paying to the Global South is very patronizing. And we have seen at the UN General Assembly vote a few weeks ago that many of the big African countries and others abstained. And then they were criticized by the West. The West should be very careful, because the West falls into the trap of double standards. They've put a huge amount of their eggs into the basket with Ukraine, Europeans certainly for geographical reasons. But we have to understand the legacy and the problems that the Global South have. We have to understand the influence that China has. We have to understand where they're coming from with colonialism and imperialism, and that Russia's far away, although Russia is now playing a role in parts of Sahel in Africa. And the global south, especially India, is doesn't want to take sides because it's too dangerous to take sides in the sense that when this is all over, what will happen to them? But there's so many elements of history, colonialism, occupation, so many elements that shape the views of these countries in the global south, and we should take their views very, very seriously.
Yes, I want to press this point because, you know, in the United States, an ongoing political debate is about immigration, migration, undocumented illegal. There are all these euphemisms for people pressing on the Mexican border with the United States. Millions, we're told, over these last years. That is part of the global south crisis. It's true you see it in Europe, the tragedy recently in Italy, dozens of people who lost their lives in a craft that broke up. The question of how the European Union deals with the migrants and the human trafficking, not only from North Africa, but also from Turkey, also crossing into Greece, also crossing into the Baltic states or the Balkans. All of that is part of the global south. And I mention that not because we can solve it immediately, but it's not getting the attention, given numbers, Judy, given that we're talking about billions of people, it's not getting the attention that the combat in Donbass is. This is disproportionate to the concerns of the 21st century.
I think it is disproportionate is a good way of describing it. But what we have is a geographical mismatch that for the Europeans, the Baltic states, Central Europeans, just to give our readers this map of Europe, the enemy, the threat is Russia. And certainly for the global south, they have enormous problems of demography, of climate change, of corruption, of water resources, scarce water resources, of food security, and also just very difficult governance issues. And these are the issues that will shape the future of that continent, and it will shape the future of the European continent as well, because if we don't reach out in a very economic way and loosening our trade regulations, that's from the European perspective, and understanding that climate change is universal, just as human rights is, the global south will continue to be an enormous problem. And I can understand why for Europe it'll deal with migration, poverty, health issues. And this is going to demand a completely different mindset that must be able to couple one crisis, the Ukraine crisis, with another continuing crisis, which is the global south.
I want to press this point because the Biden administration recently has changed directions about the border security in line with members of Congress, and that border security sometimes can be exaggerated here, but a fortress America, don't let them in unless, that sort of talk. Do you hear that same talk in Europe? Certainly in Britain, not a member of the EU, I appreciate that. But the new prime minister in Britain is making equally sharp remarks about building a wall or making sure that no immigrants come across the very dangerous English Channel. Do you hear that in Germany now as well?
Yes. Well, you hear it all over Europe now, building walls, creating Fortress Europe, and more checks on the European Union's external borders with non-EU member states, and trying to ensure that refugees or would-be refugees, if they want to seek asylum, they should have asylum processes, whether in Turkey or in Libya or other countries. It's an indication that Europe, despite its wealth and its prosperity and what it came from after 1945, is losing the human ethical dimension of giving refuge to people who really do need refuge. Of course, there are those who will exploit this and the traffickers and everything. But this demands not the world of the global South language. This demands an enormous cooperation between the Europeans and the African countries on how you deal with these issues. These are economic issues and climate issues, demographic issues, prosperity issues and corruption issues. They're not solved overnight.
I'm speaking with Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. She's in Berlin. It's springtime in the second year of war, and hard questions are being asked, not only in the European Union and the United States, but also in Russia. And when we come back, what about the young people in Russia? What about the future of the Russian society, given what we're told is a meat grinder in Donbass and despair of being cut off from the globalization of these last decades? The young people especially look to a future in which they are behind a wall. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.